At the Peanut on Main, the bartender scrapes plates after the lunch rush. Our producer, Matthew Long Middleton, was there to see what got tossed.
French fries and some ketchup. That was not very much of a BLT. Lots more wing bones. Somebody did like the tomatoes on their BLT, apparently. Lots of happy plates.
What does that mean? What do you mean by happy plates?
There's not much to throw in the trash.
We live in a world where there's something remarkable about a plate of food going back to a kitchen without any scraps or morsels left on it, a happy plate. But that's just one small piece of the giant food waste problem. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we're going to ask a simple question. Are you going to eat that? It's a question that relates to every step in the food production and consumption process. When a farmer plants a particular crop, is someone going to eat that? In the grocery store, when you fill your cart, are you going to eat that? I'd like to start today's conversation by introducing Corrine Page. She's the director of the gleaning program at After the Harvest KC. Corrine, can you start by explaining what gleaning is?
Yes. That is when you go to the farms and fields and orchards and you pick what's left after the farmer's done with his harvest.
So how does it work? How do you become, are you invited to the fields?
Yes. We meet farmers at various farm expos and conventions and speak with them about what we do. And then they do invite us. They'll call us and say they have a certain crop ready, and they usually want us there the next day or maybe a couple days later. And we bring a team of volunteers, try to find enough people. That's kind of difficult sometimes. But we bring people to the field, and I meet with the field supervisor. We'll meet with the farmer ahead of time, and he shows us what he wants us to take and how to do it. They all have different ideas of how to pick something, and we follow their directions. And then we just take it to local food pantries and food banks.
To the best of your knowledge, why is there something left after the harvest? Why doesn't the farmer take everything?
Well, typically they want to plant more than what they need to sell. If they know they have certain clients that have certain needs, how many pounds of whatever they need during the year, they will plant more just in case it's a hard year, not enough rain, too hot. And they also sort through the produce so that just the very nicest looking produce is getting to the customer.
Nicest looking. So that's an important piece of the equation?
Oh, yes. Peaches have to have the right peachy color. They have to be the right size. They can't be too small if they're canning peaches. And there are all kinds of standards for every kind of vegetable. Carrots are only supposed to have one root, one tap root. Sometimes they have two or three or five. And so the fruit that or the vegetables that aren't totally meeting the standard will not make it to the market or the grocery store or their buyer.
Is that standard set by just what consumers will and won't buy?
I think the standard kind of got set by markets, you know, by grocery stores and by the fact that people don't, not many people grow their own food anymore. And so they think that it has to look a certain way. But the stores sometimes, like zucchinis having to be like 7 inches long, some of that stuff is just because of the way that they've set the produce display up. They have to fit within those metal slots, you know, so that if they're too long, they don't fit right, and so they don't want them. But, you know, the fact that you go to the store and all the bell peppers are a certain size and boxy, they don't grow that way. They're all sizes. They have points on them. But so it seems to me like the stores kind of are setting a standard. Corn has to be a certain diameter, caliper, and if it's not, it gets sent out to the dump.
Wow. So, okay, we're going to get to the store in just a second, but how much food do you collect from surplus crops in any given year?
Well, we're a very tiny organization. We were around as another organization, but we split off early this year. So far, year to date, we have saved over 450,000 pounds of food.
450,000 pounds. And that's just one gleaning organization. And there are there a lot of fields out there that have surplus harvests that aren't being collected by people like you?
Yes. This is the time of year where I try not to call all my farmers because they'll usually say, yes, come out. And we can only be in a few fields a day. getting things. So there's a wonderful farmer in Osceola that had 17 rows of tomatoes for us, and we just couldn't get down there often enough to get them. They all went to waste, pretty much.
Well, we're partnering today with Harvest Public Media, whose food waste documentary Tossed Out airs on public television this Friday. Joining the conversation from Harvest Public Media is reporter Chris Husted. And Chris, your focus on the Tossed Out project was the retail piece of the picture. What can you tell us about that just generally to contextualize the problem?
Right. So there's about more than 400 million pounds of food available each year at the grocery store and restaurant level. And of that more than 400 million pounds, about a third of that never makes it into the stomach of a consumer. And that's worth about $160 billion of worth of food. And like Corinne was saying, a lot of the blame goes on to the grocery stores themselves, but also to the consumer in this cycle that's kind of perpetuated between the two.
So when you really dug into this issue, what conclusions did you reach as far as maybe a few details that could explain a lot about why so much food goes uneaten, unpurchased, just wasted?
Corinne hit on one, which is the presentation of the food. It has to be immaculate so the consumer will want to buy it and return to buy that product again, especially the produce. And the stores themselves, they will cull the aisles for this ugly fruit that's already bruising because no one's going to want to buy that bruised banana or that peach that is already softening too much. The other problem is there are plenty of pre-made meals being made in grocery stores now, and that is the grocery store catering to the consumer as well. A lot of people come home from work, and they don't have time to make their family a meal. So they'll go to the grocery store, and they'll pick up that rotisserie chicken and maybe a side of mashed potatoes or whatnot to as a convenience. And with more people demanding this convenience, those aisles are growing next to the deli section. And with those aisles growing, so does the problem of food waste, the packaging material, but also the amount of food, because that food isn't necessarily easily donated or composted or picked up. So it's going to be thrown away, and that contributes to food waste as well. The other main problem is date labeling, and there's a lot of confusion over date labels, which many consumers assume those date labels you see on products are an expiration date when essentially they're not.
We're going to get more on that. We've got a food scientist with us, and we're going to go to her in a second. But I want to just get a little more into this retail issue. How do we compare in America with other developed countries when it comes to food waste at the retail level? Is the problem the same everywhere, or is there something particularly problematic about how we do it here?
Well, we expect our consumers expect produce and products ready for purchase around the clock, every year. We need our zucchinis season round. We need our canned foods immaculate. We need our breads made fresh every day. That's not necessarily what you get in other countries. The other problem is the misinterpretation of labels, which I know we'll get to again. But other countries have had this issue too. But we, for some reason, have a much bigger issue with interpreting it because it's not federally regulated.
Well, the problem of food waste at the consumer level is a piece of it that most of us are most familiar with. We go to the store or the farmer's market, buy what we think we need, maybe supplement that with some items from our own gardens. And in the end, most of us find, with some regularity, that there are some perishables in our refrigerators that just don't look or smell quite right anymore. Or maybe a package marked sell by a certain date scares us out of using something that might be perfectly good. So here to help us understand that part of the problem is a food scientist. It's my pleasure to welcome Gina Roberts of the National Food Lab to the discussion. Hi, Gina.
Good morning, everybody.
So talk to me about the labels on food. Sell by, use by, how should customers understand these labels?
Yeah, so Chris is right that there is no federal regulation for foods sold in the U.S. on what a sell by, use by, or best by date would mean, except for infant formula. That's the one regulated food product.
Explain that. But why is that, and how is it regulated?
Well, for infant formula, it's regulated with either an expiration date or use-by date because of the vitamin and the mineral contents in infant formula. in that case, it almost does become a food safety issue, not from the microbiology, but because the infant might not be getting enough nutrition if you feed that formula to the infant past the expiration day, because then some of the nutrients in the formula have degraded over time. Uh-huh. So that would be the one category that there absolutely is a lot of regulation on infant formula. And there is an expiration date or a use-by date on that.
And people should just follow that exactly.
Yes, they should. They absolutely should follow that exactly. For most other foods sold in the U.S., there is no regulation. There are maybe a couple states that have some use-by or best-by mandates, maybe on eggs or something like that. But otherwise, what the manufacturer is trying to do with these dates that they put on their package is inform consumers on when the product is at its highest quality, its most delicious flavor. So it's not a food safety, as I think Chris was also mentioning. It's not a food safety parameter, or it's not a food safety indicator. It's all about food quality. So if that can of beans has a use-by date of tomorrow, and I forget about that canned bean in my cupboard, and I find it 6 months from now, you can be sure that I'm going to open up that can of beans and I'm going to feed it to my family. And there's a lot of literature, there's a lot of information out there that says, you know, canned products are going to last anywhere from 2 to 5 years. No food safety problem if the can is still intact and it hasn't rusted. The only thing that you might give up would be quality. Maybe those green beans aren't quite as green. Maybe they're not quite as crisp. Maybe they're a little bit more mushy.
So is that a nutritional quality issue too, or just sort of aesthetic and taste quality?
It's going to be mainly aesthetic and taste. You know, you could have some vitamin degradation over time, certainly if those beans get to be 5 years out past their code date. But there's still a lot of nutritional value in that can of beans.
Hallelujah. I can eat my canned beans 5 years from now.
There you go.
Well, it sounds like there are some labels and some date-related warnings we should pay pretty close attention to. One thing that I'm ashamed to admit it, but sometimes throwing out is eggs. You can't smell the eggs in quite the effective manner you can with a jug of milk. And, you know, it seems risky to eat eggs past those dates that are marked on there. Something could go wrong, or could it not?
Well, that's actually a good example, Gina. So on eggs, they also have a use-by or a best-by date on the eggs. But really, you can safely use those eggs, I would say, 3 to 5 weeks past that purchase date or past that use-by or best-by date if your eggs have been kept refrigerated the entire time. And then what I might do as just an added, you know, food safety precaution is I wouldn't be making any soft cook eggs with those eggs that are past their use by date. I'm going to hard boil them. I'm going to hard cook them. I'm going to scramble them, or I'm going to use them in a baked item. So I would still keep those eggs in my refrigerator, and I do.
So just no runny yolks, basically.
That's right. And that is just your added safety precaution for those eggs.
I feel bad about some eggs I have unnecessarily tossed. But we started the show hearing the sound of food being tossed in a restaurant kitchen. When it comes to restaurants and other food service establishments, what are the rules that govern what can and can't be used and for how long?
So for food service establishments, you know, I'm not sure on that one. But what I would say is when you're a consumer and you're taking leftovers home, I think actually Chris hit on that comment too, is that as more people are eating out and having other dining experiences, they may or may not take that food home. So I always take my food home because I don't want to see food waste. But then when you take that food home, you need to, of course, go home right away, refrigerate that food. And then those leftovers, you need to eat them between 1 to 3 days later. So they can't stay in your refrigerator for very long, though.
Well, casual observation leads me to believe that there are basically two kinds of people, and this is not scientific, when it comes to food safety. The extremely cautious type and then the overly confident type. The extremely cautious type refrigerates practically everything and tosses anything that's been sitting out for like 5 minutes, whereas the overly confident type opens a jug of milk, smells it, thinks that doesn't smell too weird, takes a big gulp and says, yeah, I'm still alive, and then keeps going. So I may be exaggerating, but just a little bit. Where is the happy medium here? Do you have any rules of thumb for where reality lies? Because I think we all make up our own rules a little bit.
That's probably a pretty good example. So I think you can bucket food products into maybe three categories. You have your shelf stable or your pantry items, things that you can keep right in your pantry. You have refrigerated products, and then you have frozen products. So in general, for any products that you keep in your pantry, a bag of rice, your cereal, granola bars, pasta, those products are, they can be consumed past their use-by or sell-by date, sometimes anywhere from 3 months, as I said, with canned food, to 5 years later. The only thing that you potentially give up would be quality. So maybe that granola bar doesn't taste as crunchy. Maybe those oats taste slightly more rancid. Maybe you can taste it. Maybe you can't even in that granola bar. But there's no food safety issue. So if I was going to open up that granola bar and start eating it, and I smelt it and it smelt a little weird, then I would just throw it in the trash. But eating that granola bar is not going to get you sick. On your refrigerated products, the very conservative person should pay attention to the dates on the package, because they're there for a reason. There are some microorganisms, or there's at least one microorganism that can grow slowly under refrigeration and can make you sick. So for refrigerated products, I really do pay attention to those use by or those code dates, except on eggs. I will use those 3 to 5 weeks past their date. Milk's been pasteurized, so it's gone through a fairly rigorous process to make it safe. As long as my milk has been refrigerated the whole time, my children haven't been drinking directly out of the milk, you actually can take that out of the refrigerator and smell it or look at it. Does it smell okay past the code date? Is there any curdling happening? If it smells okay, you can eat it. Now, you cannot smell food safety, but you can smell food quality. What would be growing in that milk potentially is bacteria that isn't going to make you sick, but it's bacteria that's going to spoil the milk, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. It does. Well, we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be taking your calls. What are your questions about food safety and food waste, and about preventing food waste on the consumer level? Why do you end up with uneaten food items, and when do you ask yourself, are you going to eat that? Call 816-235-2888 to join the discussion. That's 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. And we're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard is a collaboration with Harvest Public Media, all about the problem of food waste in America, and specifically in our region and in our refrigerators. We'll be taking your calls at 816-235-2888 to address the problem at the consumer level. We have a food scientist who can help you with questions about what is and isn't safe to eat. Go ahead and call 816-235-2888, and while you're dialing, let's explore this issue a little more from the production side of things. I'd like to play a clip from a story by Harvest Public Media's Peggy Lowe, based right here at KCUR. She went to Farmland Foods plant in a Missouri town called Milan, where hogs from several nearby confinement operations are processed. That's a polite way of saying they're slaughtered, butchered, and boxed. Peggy wanted to find out how much of the animal makes it to consumers as meat. She found out that it was about half of the hog, but the rest of the animal is sold to manufacturers of other consumer products.
Entering the rendering site of the plant is a physical blow. It's hot and loud. My glasses fog up. I gag several times at the smell, which I'm told is decomposition.
All of the byproducts from our kill and our cut process make it over here into our raw material bin. Raw material is going to be skin, cutting fat, bones, skulls, entrails, all of that.
The raw material is crushed, breaking the bones and making the pieces into small chunks. It's then sent to the supercooker, a huge barrel-shaped machine that is essentially a giant deep fat fryer. The bone and meat meals, both wet and dry, are made mostly into livestock feed and pet food. Although just half of the animal is cut into meat, Smithfield's Sherbing says nearly 100% of it is used.
The saying that we've used is we sell everything but the squeal.
For that whole story by Peggy Lowe, go to harvestpublicmedia.org. Chris Husted of Harvest Public Media, Peggy's story gets at the production side of things for livestock and meat. What's your general sense of how the business models for food production may factor into the problems you encountered at the retail level? With 40% of the food we produced going to waste, there must be some systemic issues.
Bringing it back to the grocery stores, they have a problem upstream and downstream of them. Dealing with food waste. They're kind of setting the bar. So when a grocery store orders food from a butcher or a rendering plant to for sale, they often will order a certain amount of meat, and that meat will have to be sold. If it's not sold, then it's wasted or it's composted. Also, on the other end of it, downstream, they're putting enough food out there that they're trying to entice the customer to purchase, you know, buy one, get one, instead of offering something like half off. So then the consumer, the shopper, is going home with more food than they planned on purchasing anyway, and more food that they can go through. So a lot of the food ends up in the household in the garbage because of this, you know, cyclic process here that kind of stems from the grocery store.
Yeah, that is something that frustrates me as a consumer, and maybe I'm alone on this, but I shop for food for two people, and I can't get a small enough quantity to serve just me and the other person in my household. I mean, I would seriously love to be able to buy two eggs.
Right, and that's the other problem is packaging. A lot of the food that's prepackaged comes in large enough amounts that not very many people who are only serving one or two or even a family of four can go through enough, can use all that food. So it will go to waste.
Karine Page of After the Harvest KC, what's your sense of this based on your experience gathering surplus crops from area farms after farmers have harvested whatever they think they might be able to sell? How does what we just heard about the livestock side of things compare to what you see in the fruit, vegetable, and grain operations?
Well, I'm only seeing it from the farms that invite us out. We have many, many farmers in Kansas and Missouri, over 80 that we work with that say they want to work with us. But I'll tell you, not every farmer calls us every year. And we might be at a farm two times a week one year and then not at all the next year. But if you are invited out to the farm, there is just so much food. We hardly ever, ever get all the food that they have said is ours to get. And you can go to an orchard, and just any orchard, there are just thousands and thousands of apples on the ground. And they fall every night, and the apples that fall are totally perfectly edible. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. They're perfect apples, and they're actually ripe. I mean, they're perfectly ripe when they fall. So we see a lot of waste, but again, it's partly because the farmer is, I don't want to say forced, but the market, if they're going to sell it, it has to look perfect. The organic farmers are not going to put their kale leaves in their CSA baskets or take them to the market if they have bug holes in them, bite holes, which is just air. You know, once the bug is bitten, it's just air and it's just perfectly fine to eat. But they won't show or sell any of that. They will eat it themselves, but they won't be able to sell it because we have such high standards now about what we want to get.
Let's talk to Jessica in Kansas City. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Thanks for joining the conversation. What, do you have a question for us?
Yeah, I'm wondering, what about foods that were shelf-stable but are now opened that you can't consume all in one sitting, like salad dressings, like bottled fruit that has a screw lid, and salsa, things like that? How soon should those be thrown out, and how long can they be kept in your fridge?
So let's turn to Gina Roberts of the National Food Lab for an answer to that. Gina, what do you think?
Hi, Jessica. So that's a very good question. So you asked about salad dressing that's initially it's shelf-stable, you have it in your pantry, but then you open it up, and then once you open it up, you do need to put it in the refrigerator. So salad dressings, it can be a little variance on how long it will last in the refrigerator. Some salad dressings are natural and they have no preservatives in them, and other salad dressings have a lot of preservatives in them. So you have to do a little bit probably of reading the label, but otherwise, like an Italian salad dressing or a vinaigrette, a French vinaigrette, is very acidic. They tend to last quite a while in the refrigerator. I would say several months in the refrigerator. So you have a shelf life no longer of a couple years, but probably of just a couple months in the refrigerator. You asked also about salsa. So you're right, canned salsa or the jarred salsa that you can keep in your pantry, same thing, lasts for a long time in the pantry, a couple years, but once you open it, you probably only have actually maybe 1 to 3 weeks in your refrigerator, especially if you double dipped in that salsa, then you really don't have a whole lot of time.
Double dipping actually matters?
Oh, absolutely, because then you're putting the bacteria from your mouth into the salsa, and that really cuts down on the shelf life.
Oh, I have some relatives who are going to be very mad at me for assuring them that was fine.
Well, then you just have to eat the salsa right away, and it can still be fine.
Let's see what Roberta in Kansas City has to say. Roberta, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, I love this show. I am one of those people who throws out the eggs the day that they are expired, and I call my mother long distance to say, can I eat this, or how do I cook this if it's old? So this is really helpful to me. But
oh,
I have a question about freezing things. Because I throw out so much, I've been trying to freeze things that I've made so that I don't have so much leftovers that get old. So I'm wondering how long things keep in the freezer, whether I'm freezing them or whether it's a big box of tacos from Costco and that kind of thing. Do those last past the date? And then you were just talking about salad dressing, but I'm wondering how that applies to other things like mustard and ketchup and soy sauce and things like that.
Okay, so Gina Roberts, take it away.
Okay, Roberta, I'm so glad to hear that you are freezing things, because freezing food products, they last indefinitely in the freezer. So as long as you maintain, you know, that freezer and it's zero or lower, we could say it almost lasts forever. What you'll give up on a frozen product is, again, quality. So you're going to take that New York steak out of your freezer, and maybe you forgot about it in the very back, and you go to thaw it and you see a lot of freezer buildup. And maybe the steak doesn't quite taste as good. Maybe you got a little bit of freezer burn in there, or it tastes almost like fish. So what will happen, again, is it's all quality. It's not safety. So maybe some odors transferred to other food products, or you just got ice buildup in your freezer, so you had a little bit of freezer burn. But you can see that as you take the product out of the freezer and, of course, put it in the refrigerator to thaw, not your counter.
Okay, can
so
you
I like that.
Stop there and talk a little bit about safe thawing, as long as we're talking about safety of frozen foods.
So when you're thawing products, you do not want to thaw them on your counter. The most you can leave a frozen food on the counter is 2 hours or less. But you really want to thaw all frozen products in your refrigerator. And I would thaw them on my bottom shelf, and I usually put them like on a plate or in a bowl, so as they drip and they potentially have any raw meat or raw turkey juice on the packaging, that it doesn't drip all the way down my refrigerator, that it's on the bottom shelf, and then I have it in a bowl or in a plate, and I can catch those drippings and I can keep everything else in my refrigerator safe.
Wow.
Probably
okay.
Takes about, depending upon the size of the product too, it could take anywhere from 1 to 3 days to defrost or to thaw your frozen product.
When you say depending on the product, is there somewhere where all of this kind of information is collected so that I would know whether I'm dealing with something that's a one-day kind of product or a three-day kind of product?
There is. You know, USDA has a pretty good website. I think you can just Google shelf life of food USDA, and that'll bring up a couple charts. So I like to go to either FDA or USDA, because I know that those have been really vetted scientifically, and that I can trust that data.
And then Roberta also asked about like mustard and soy sauce.
So I like that. Those are called condiments. So mustard, soy sauce, ketchup, any of those have a very low pH, meaning they're very acidic. Once you open those products up, obviously keep them in your refrigerator. You can actually even put them in the door of your refrigerator where it even gets a tiny bit warmer there. Those, you know, those last a pretty darn long time. 6 months, maybe even longer in your refrigerator. Again, it's not going to be a food safety issue with those products. It'll be quality. Maybe you left it out too long. Maybe you see a little bit of mold growing along the edges. If I saw that, I would throw it away right away. But otherwise, I just can't imagine what could go wrong with mustard or soy sauce or ketchup in my refrigerator.
So when you see mold growing on something, you really do need to throw it away. You shouldn't just like scrape that off and keep going.
Well, for the most part, so the conservative person, Gina, you had those two analogies earlier, that conservative person would just throw it away. For most products, I would throw it away, except for hard cheeses. I cut it off, and I would eat it. Not the mold, the other part of the cheese.
The other cheese mold that isn't the mold on the mold.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Ellen in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Ellen.
Hi there.
Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you for this wonderful program.
Please, do you have a question or comment to share?
Yes, yes. I am, I try to be a thrifty shopper, and I, at my local grocery, they have a lot of 50% off prepared foods, and it's usually probably marked down the day that it should have been bought, or the day after. Turkey, tetrazzini, all of this carry out, ready to go food, is there a different way of handling it as if you bought it the day before full price?
Okay, let's talk to both Chris Husted of Harvest Public Media and Gina Roberts of the National Food Lab about this one. Chris, what are your thoughts hearing this?
With prepackaged or pre-made dishes, a lot of the times at the end of the day, it will go on discount so you can purchase it at a reasonable price, and you have to, and you can consume it right away. Now, I'll let Gina handle the what you do with the leftovers if you don't eat it all. At the grocery store, what doesn't get purchased can get picked up by food banks or food pantries, but their problem is they have to serve it right away because you can't necessarily freeze down some of these meals, and that creates some food waste. So it either gets composted or thrown away. But as far as the what you do at home, I'll let Gina talk about that one.
Gina Roberts.
So, yeah, definitely. Chris brought up some very good points. I would say on these prepared foods that are made in like retail or grocery store delis, if you haven't opened it and you put it in your refrigerator, you probably have about 1 week or less. They've gone through less processing to make that food safe, or potentially no processing to make that food safe. So you do have to handle that food very carefully. Don't run any errands, you know, after you've gone grocery shopping. Go home, get it in your refrigerator. And then once you open it, again, my thoughts on leftovers are you have 1 to 3 days to consume it.
Okay.
If you've opened it up.
1 to 3 days. All right. Let's talk to Lois in Blue Springs. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I think you might have answered this, but I have a son who is extremely, extremely conservative, and I have a tendency to buy these turkeys that are on sale or free at Christmas or Thanksgiving, a good price for the money for the meat. And I had one, and it had been in my freezer over a year, but I brought it out and I cooked it. I thought it was delicious. But he wouldn't eat it because it had been in the freezer for over a year. And in the same time, I think I know that you're going to say that that's okay, but I was cleaning out that freezer, and I found about 10 chickens down at the bottom of my freezer, and they must have been there for about 10 years. And I had given them to somebody. I thought they were just going to eat them, you know, as they thawed out, they were going to eat.
Well, Lois, I have one thing I want to tell you, which is that our Tell KCUR question this week is, what is the oldest thing in your fridge? And we want you to tweet us those answers if you use Twitter using the Tell KCUR hashtag. So perhaps you could consider photographing those 10 chickens, but I'll let Gina Roberts take this one.
So your son is missing out, I think, on some wonderful turkey, because I do the same thing at Christmas or Thanksgiving time, is I buy extra turkey, I freeze it, and then we have, you know, turkey the day after 4th of July or something like that. So whether you have that turkey 6 months or 1 year later, I think that's fine. There, again, there's no food safety issue with that. If that turkey was kept in the freezer and then you defrosted it, thawed it out carefully in your refrigerator. So your son's missing out, and you're a very wise woman. Now, you said you had, was it 10 chickens you said you had in the bottom of the freezer, or chickens that were 10 years old?
It was 10. We're going to have to answer that when we get back, because we're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll hear how composting does and doesn't help with the larger problem. I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to Central Standard. Don't go away. In a moment, we're going to switch gears, but just a little bit. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we've been talking about food waste this morning on Central Standard. We've been talking about whether you're going to eat what's in your fridge and on your shelf. And we do want to hear from you about that at 816-235-2888. But we're also going to talk about what to do when the answer is, nope, not going to eat that. We'll hear more about that in a second. But Gina Roberts, we just had a caller who is sadly no longer on the line, but she mentioned that she had 10 frozen chickens at the bottom of her freezer that she had forgotten about for, she suspects, 10 years.
So that might be one, nope, not going to eat that. Again, not going to be a food safety issue with those chickens, but after 10 years, you're just going to have way too much freezer burn. The meat isn't going to taste very good. It's just not going to be a very good tasting chicken. I suppose if you're desperate, you could eat it, but I'm just not that desperate.
And Corrine Page of After the Harvest KC, you are also a microbiologist, and you wanted to share a little bit about sterilizing things and preparing foods.
Yeah, a former microbiologist. In the lab, we do things to keep things sterile just because we have to, and we want the reagents to be, you know, all very, very, very pristine and not harboring any other bacteria because we're growing bacteria. So you can do something called flaming. When you open something up, you can flame the lid of it or the bottleneck right at the top.
Do you need like a torch or something?
Yeah. Or, you know, one of those, you have them in the kitchens now for like making things look brown. You could do that, but you probably won't be doing that. You need to just keep the cap close to, like, the milk cap. Don't put it upside down. This drives me crazy because my husband does it. Don't put it with the milk side up, you know, laying, or the jar lid laying up so that bacteria can then fall on it. And then when you screw it back on, you're going to introduce bacteria to the whatever it is. There's bacteria and yeast everywhere in the air. So just don't do that. And another thing you can do with your food, let's say you made a spectacularly delicious soup. You can just leave it in the pot in the refrigerator. And then if you, and I agree with Gina that you should use something that you've, you know, opened up within 3 days. But what I do is I will take that soup and then I'll just put it back on the stove and I'll bring it to a boil for a minute and then let it cool down and put it back in the fridge if I know that I wasn't going to be able to eat it within 3 days and I didn't want to freeze it. So, I mean, what you're doing when you boil is you're killing the bacteria and the yeast. So that's what I do as a former microbiologist in my house.
Gina Roberts, is this all checking out?
Absolutely. And I'm so pleased to be on the line with another microbiologist.
Hello.
Well, so let's say that we've decided, nope, not going to eat that. This one, I'm sorry, it's over, I tried. Maybe composting is your solution to getting rid of food scraps without sending them to landfills. Some cities, like Seattle and Portland, have curbside composting. Let's hear what Harvest Public Media's Cassandra Profita found in her reporting on these programs.
This is a beautiful compost, actually. It's nice and hot.
Stephen Banchero is the CEO of Cedar Grove. And right now, he's plunging his hand into a warm pile of fresh compost. In 3 months, his company can turn a stinky pile of food waste into a nutrient-rich soil amendment. Banchero says a lot of that product gets sold to local farmers, who then use it to grow more food.
I don't think a lot of people understand how closed loop of a system this is. I think it creates the most local renewable resource around, and I think it really takes a dramatic impact from landfilling.
David Alloway analyzes environmental problems for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. He says while cities like Portland and Seattle make it easy to compost food waste, that doesn't mean their residents should keep wasting food. That's because most of the environmental impacts of food waste don't come from putting it in a landfill.
even though food in a landfill is a pretty bad thing, the impacts of producing the food in the first place is typically 10 to 30 times higher. There are a tremendous amount of resources and pollution that come from the production of food.
Eloy says a quarter of all freshwater withdrawals in the U.S. and as much as 5% of the country's greenhouse gas emissions come from producing food that never gets eaten. And composting doesn't do anything to reduce those impacts. That was Harvest Public Media's Cassandra Profita reporting for the documentary Tossed Out, Food Waste in America. So, Corrine Page, director of gleaning for After the Harvest KC, are there limits to what the individual can do? Or do you think that consumer by consumer, we can make the difference by reducing food waste in our own homes? It sounds like a lot of the solutions most of us turn to, things like composting, you know, the problem is we just have to stop wasting so much food.
Well, I don't know if I'm I would have to answer that just by myself, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it's going to be an educational experience for everybody. You know, I mean, we have to get people to understand that the ugly vegetables or misshapen fruits, anything with a little bump or, you know, just a cosmetic blemish is edible and that we should eat it. That would help the farmers not have to produce twice as much as they need. I mean, that's the first step.
Something I wonder, and this is maybe a question for Chris Husted of Harvest Public Media, is whether consumers have much of a chance to be tested on that, to see, like, have people come around on this? Maybe I decide, okay, I'll eat the misshapen bell pepper, but if it never comes to the grocery store, do I have the opportunity to act on that change of heart? Chris Husted?
That's a good question. As far as I've seen, I can't really tell a difference just yet. The stores that are out there still are putting out the most attractive produce possible. As far as a shift in public perception of what is a good-looking fruit or what a good-looking vegetable and what's edible, ideally we'd like to think that that is changing, because then we would be preventing a lot more food waste, and then stores and retail venues would not be adapting their produce stands to people like consumers who are looking for the best quality or the best looking fruit they can find.
So, given everything you know about the business model for grocery stores and how that interacts with farms and farmers and the production side of things, the handling of perishable goods in general, what is your thought about the power of the individual to make a difference in this food waste problem?
Ideally, we would love all food in the food supply chain to be consumed. That would help us out, you know, with environmental issues and with some economic issues, and especially with one thing we haven't touched too much on, but is the food insecure Americans in the U.S., which is 1 in 7 households.
So that's to say people who are not getting enough food.
Right. People who are looking for people who don't live near accessible food, healthy food. So if that ever shifted completely, that would, I think, have to start with at the consumer level. And it's an education issue, meaning people need to understand that maybe the food doesn't look perfect, but it still has all the nutrients that you're looking for out of that food. And you can cook it and make it look whatever, you know, however you want it to look. But until that shifts, we're going to be stuck with, I think, stores and restaurants catering to this consumer perception of immaculate food.
Corrine Page, do you want to weigh in on this?
Yes, and you might have read about this already, Chris, but in Europe they have this, I don't know, the ugly fruit and vegetable. I'm not going to come up with the right word. It's all in French, but they sell these not perfect looking, and they have cute names from like the misshapen eggplant, the unfortunate whatever, you know, and they have pictures of all these very grossly misshapen vegetables, and they are marketing them in stores, and they sell for 30% less than the other beautiful looking vegetables, and they sell out all the time, and there's actually now a business around that, and you know, they have they're trying to reduce their food waste in Europe too.
All right. Well, let's turn to a caller who has a question about this stuff. Shannon in Grandview, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question is, are dates on meats and cheeses and, you know, boxed crackers, what's the difference between the sell-by date on those? How harsh is the sell-by date?
So are you saying, how do we interpret sell-by dates? Is that essentially the question on shelf items like crackers?
Yes.
Okay. Gina Roberts of the National Food Lab, what do you say?
Well, sell-by dates are there usually on refrigerated products so that the retailer, the grocery store, knows to sell the product by that time or pull it off the shelf. And you'll see usually on milk, like fluid milks, will have a sell-by date. And that's the cue to the retailer. And that's also some confusion to the consumer, too, because that's just when the retailer needs to sell it, not necessarily when it's going to go bad. We talked about this a little bit, but those boxed crackers, that's a shelf-stable product. That's something you put in your pantry. It still might have a sell-by date, but it usually has a best-by or use-by date on it. And again, if you haven't opened that box of crackers up, they're probably good for a long time. The only thing that's going to go bad with crackers is a quality issue. You're going to bite into it. It's not going to be quite as crispy, quite as crunchy, or it might taste, you know, slightly rancid if it's a cracker with, you know, some oils in it.
So
if it's past its date.
Oh,
can I jump in too?
Yeah, please.
So also, to piggyback on what Gina's saying, several states have different guidelines on which products need to be labeled and which can't be sold after those dates. But how those dates are determined isn't clearly defined, and it varies state to state. So, for example, milk was brought up. In one state, that date may be assigned based on 12 days after pasteurization. Next door state could be 17 days after pasteurization is when that date is determined. So it can vary from state to state. And there is no explanation or legal definition, of a sell-by or use-by or best-by date, as Gina's mentioned.
That seems crazy.
Yeah, it's determined by the manufacturer. Again, you know, this is the part to hammer home, I think. Determined by the manufacturer on when the best peak quality of their product is. So you return to buy it again and you eat it at its best. So you go back and you buy it.
Is there any movement to change that, to maybe standardize that and turn it into something that a consumer could easily understand and interpret just across the board?
I mean, Gina can talk about this probably, but all the researchers I've spoken with, there is this movement of food policy experts and food safety experts who are calling for a more federal uniform standard of how these dates are determined. So not only is there a policy set in place so stores know what to do with it, but also consumers can have the education that they need to know what this date means. Because you'll see, as we said, sell-by dates and use-by dates and best-by dates, and some just have dates on them with no explanation what kind of date it is. So uniform policy could help determine what these products are, how long these products are actually good for quality-wise, but also safety-wise.
Okay. We're running kind of low on time, so I want to turn back to Gina Roberts, who's the only person I haven't asked about this. What do you think about the power of the individual to reduce food waste? There's, you know, just in terms of people even could understanding safety, food safety, make that difference?
Oh, I think the power of the individual has a lot of strength. If you think about, we're talking about food waste, and we 5 years ago, we would have never had this conversation. This is something that a lot of people are talking about right now. A lot of bigger organizations, a lot of smaller organizations. I see it more on social media. I certainly post on this. I have it on my personal Facebook page so that all my friends know about food safety versus food quality. And then a year ago, the National Resources Defense Council, in conjunction with Harvard Food Law and Policy Clinic, published a very well-received paper on how confusing food date labels lead to food waste in America. And I think that's been a bit of a catalyst for us. When I go to industry conferences, so one of the conferences that I'm actually putting together or working on putting together with some of my colleagues is on food waste, food quality versus food safety. Because it does get difficult at the retailer and for the food manufacturer, it's sometimes a fine line. And they have to make sure that they are selling a 100 food safe product. There can be no risk at all to the public. So it's difficult.
Chris Husted, we just have a moment, but you did mention earlier that there are 1 in 6 or 1 in 7 families in America that are food insecure. Could you just say a few more words about that? Because that's what's at stake here on some level.
Right. We talk about food waste, and a lot of the conversation is about, you know, the economic impact. But there's also that impact about people who can't get access to food or healthful food. And one in seven American households can't do that. So a way we can try to solve some of this food waste problem is make sure we get the donations to the locations where people are food insecure. And that's doable. And a lot of grocery stores are starting to do that a lot more.
That's all the time we have for today's conversation. To continue the discussion, join Harvest Public Media's Facebook chat about food waste this Friday at 12:30 Central. And don't forget that this week's Tell KCUR segment, for that, we want you to tweet us a photo of the oldest thing in your fridge. So get on that. Chris Husted of Harvest Public Media with us from Columbia, Missouri. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, Gina.
Gina Roberts of the National Food Lab, thank you.
My pleasure.
And Kareen Page of After the Harvest, Casey, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, we'll meet the leader of an Afro-Cuban drumming workshop, and we'll give local listeners a chance to express their views when it comes to child refugees crossing the border from Central America. Central Standard is produced by Sylvia Maria Gross and Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.